To see all of you this evening. You know, have you ever had something that you've been praying for or you've prayed for and it just doesn't seem to happen? You want it, but it seems to avoid your grasp. It just is elusive. You can't figure out why it isn't happening. Anybody ever have anything like that? Did you know the majority of Americans, the vast majority, almost 90% believe in prayer? They believe that prayer is important. They pray. In fact, recent studies have shown that people who were prayed for in hospitals that did not know they were being prayed for got better. The Bible talks a lot about prayer. And for most of us in this room, the kind of things that happen in our life, we want prayer to work. But sometimes there's some reasons prayers don't work. And I want to talk with you the next 2 weeks about how to get your prayers answered. And I'm going to give you a number of illustrations. But I want to start off this evening, before I show you an illustration, I want to read to you from Luke chapter 18. One of the topics that Jesus talked often to his disciples about was prayer. And in Luke chapter 18, Jesus is with his disciples. And it says, Jesus told his disciples a story to illustrate the need for constant prayer and to show them they must never give up. There was a judge in a city, he said, who was a godless man with great contempt for everyone. There was a widow in the city, and she came repeatedly appealing for justice against someone who had harmed her. The judge ignored her for a while, but eventually she wore him out. "I fear neither God nor man," he said to himself, "but this woman is driving me crazy." That's a familiar phrase. I was just saying it's a familiar phrase, you know, throughout any culture and any time. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that was what he was saying. Okay. "I'm going to see that she gets justice because she's wearing me out with her constant request." Then the Lord said, "Learn a lesson from this evil judge. Even he rendered a just decision in the end. So don't you think God will surely give justice to his chosen people who plead with him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will grant them justice. But when the Son of Man returns, how many will he find with faith?" Here's a story that Jesus is telling his disciples about this judge, lives in this city, and he's just kind of a raunchy individual. The scripture would tend to indicate he doesn't really respect God, and he doesn't respect people. In other words, he's probably easily bribed, and he favors the rich and famous. You ever notice how easy it seems for certain people in this society to get what they want from the courts or from politicians? It's interesting how there's so much unequal access in our society. If you're a famous Hollywood person, or you're a famous musician, or a famous athlete, it's so interesting to me, the access that you have to the halls of power, the halls of influence. You go into the bank, for example, but you're just an ordinary person like you or I might be, a little bit like this widow. It just doesn't seem like anybody wants to help you out. So she goes to this judge. She said, "Judge, I need help. Someone wronged me." Now, this is a widow. She has no other recourse in society. Her husband is gone. Her means of support is gone. In that society, her husband would have been her means of support. They had no insurance policies. And someone probably is trying to take what little bit of land she might have. And this judge, he just, "Get out of here. I don't want to hear your story. I don't want to hear your case." And she comes back to him repeatedly, time after time. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop for a moment and show you a video clip that I think illustrates what I want to talk with you about tonight as well as anything I've ever seen. So sit back for the next 12 minutes and enjoy this.
Mid-Manhattan Exchange.
Yes, this is Bob Wiley. I'm a patient of Dr. Marvin's. I have to speak with him right away. It's urgent.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wiley, but Dr. Marvin's out of...
It's Bob. And you are?
Betty.
Betty, hi.
Bob, Dr. Marvin's out of town and Dr. Harmon's taking his calls.
I know that, Betty. It's just that there's been some confusion. I was supposed to call Dr. Marvin, but I've lost his phone number.
Bob, I can't give out that number.
I know that, Betty. But you could call him on the other line and tell him that I'm on hold on the other line, couldn't you, please? Thanks, Betty, please.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, sweetheart. Yes?
Dr. Marvin, this is Betty at your exchange. I'm sorry to disturb you, but I have a Bob Wiley on the line who says you'll want to talk to him.
Betty, you know better than that. Dr. Harmon is covering for me.
I told him that, Doctor, but he said he lost your number and that it was urgent.
All right. Put him through.
Go ahead, Bob.
This is Dr. Marvin. What's the problem, Bob?
Dr. Marvin, how's the weather up there?
What?
How's your brood? Y'all getting a chance to relax?
Bob, I thought I made it clear to you that I'm on vacation.
Well, I know, but I'm just worse than usual this time. Really bad.
Bob, if this is really an emergency, go to the emergency room. And if it isn't, call Dr. Harmon. I'm sure he can help you.
Well, I'd just feel so much better if I knew where you were. It's Martha's Vineyard, right?
Bob.
Well, can't we just talk?
Yes, we can. In my office, after Labor Day.
After you're back from Fire Island, huh?
Goodbye, Bob.
What, you want to keep Maine all to yourself?
Goodbye, Bob.
Is this a fake hang-up? It's a fake hang-up.
No,
I'll get the phone. I'll get the phone.
Hello?
Doctor, it's Betty again. I have an urgent call from your sister.
My sister? Put her through.
Go ahead.
It's not you. It's me.
Lily? What's wrong?
Dr. Marvin, please don't be angry. This is Bob. I know that I shouldn't be calling
Bob
here.
The doctor-patient relationship is based on trust. When you call me and pretend to be my sister, I can't trust you anymore. Go to the emergency room, but please, do not call me here again.
Oh, no, no. That was not smart. That was not smart.
Who is it?
Detective Roberts from Homicide. I have some questions about a Bob Wiley.
What? That was the Bob who kept calling Dr. Marvin.
That was that Bob who kept calling. Unfortunately, Bob committed suicide about 15 minutes ago.
Oh, my God.
That's terrible.
Very sad. Should never have happened. He was a very sweet guy. But he did leave a note, however. He mentioned the name Betty.
She's Betty.
I'm Betty.
Oh. So you're Betty.
Bob called here trying to reach his psychiatrist.
Oh. Well, where is he? I'll have to ask him some questions, too.
Dr. Marvin's on vacation in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire?
I can get him on the phone for you.
Good. No, don't. If I really need to, I can have somebody from NHPD drop by, you know. But what if I wanted to write him a letter? Would you have a mailing address of some kind up there?
Oh, sure. That's P.O. Box 14.
Yes.
Lake Winnipesaukee.
Which is spelled
W-I-N-N-I-P-U-S-A-U-K-E-E. That's two A's.
Two E's.
Two N's, two E's. Thank you very much, ladies. I'm crazy about you, especially you, Betty.
Who I think it is. Hello? What? All right. Thank you for calling, Betty.
It was the service. That patient, the one who called before?
Mm-hmm.
He committed suicide.
Oh, how horrible.
Oh, well, let's not let it spoil our vacation.
Baby steps, get on a bus. Baby steps, get on a bus.
Good old-fashioned persistence. Obnoxious persistence. The question you have to ask yourself is, am I driving God crazy? You ever ask yourself that question? I ask myself that question. Although, fortunately, God is not like Dr. Leo Marvin. But some of us are like Bob. Let me just say, we ought to be like Bob. Here's this guy who's bending over backwards, trying to do every single thing he can to get a hold of Dr. Leo Marvin. He was undaunted. He didn't allow anything to get in his way. He kept asking, he kept asking, he kept looking, he kept looking. It sort of reminds me of the passage that Jesus told his disciples in Luke 11. Ask and keep on asking and you shall receive. Knock and keep on knocking and the door will be opened to you. Seek and keep on seeking and you shall find. Now remember that Jesus was not just God's representative. Jesus was God. And this is God telling us how to get answers to our prayer. The first and foremost lesson of prayer is that you must not and cannot give up. Over the years of my dealing with people and counseling people, I have found that the single greatest reason that people are not seeing the things they want in their life, we'll get to the other reason next week, but the first is because they've given up. They've quit asking. They've quit seeking. They've kept crying out. Some of us, and I'm not sure why, maybe because we have a false understanding of prayer. We just think, well, look, if God loves me, if God cares, and He doesn't forget anything, then one should be enough. It seems logical. It seems very reasonable. The only problem with it is it's the opposite of what Jesus told us to do. The Bible doesn't indicate to us anywhere that God is going to be harsh towards you, that God is going to be dictatorial, that God doesn't love you. In fact, He does love you. God is passionately concerned about everything that's going on in your life. The book of Peter tells us to cast all our care on the Lord because He cares for us. He wants to carry your burdens. He wants to answer your prayers. But you know what the Lord's interested in? He's interested, one, in finding out if we're really serious about that which we ask. As I've thought about this over the years, it's the only conclusion I can come to, is God is more concerned about what He's doing in me than being a magic genie in a bottle. Sometimes we think, God, you know, just rub the lamp, and out comes this genie. He says, what do you want me to do? Go get me this, go get me that, go do this, go do that. And God is interested in what's going on in your life. He is interested in answering prayer. He's also interested in molding you. He's also interested in teaching you the importance of perseverance, of building your faith. That's why it says here, when the Son of Man comes, returns, will He find faith on the earth? What was He saying? He was saying, when I come back, will I find any widows driving people crazy? When I come back, am I going to find people who really believe in me, who really are seeking me, or just Sunday Christians? Just when things are comfortable Christians? Or am I going to find people who will not let me go, who keep seeking after me because they believe that I am the rewarder of those who diligently seek me? Many years ago, I had a job selling auto parts. And it was not one of my funnest jobs, but it was probably one of the most important jobs I had when it comes to life lessons. I learned some extraordinary lessons during my almost 3.5 years selling auto parts. One of the things I learned was how to deal with rejection. Sometimes I wish Every person I've ever known in counsel, I could force them to go be a salesperson for a solid year. Straight commission. Sink or swim. Get out. It forces you to go meet people. It forces you to face your fears. It forces you to learn persistence. It forces you to refine your image. It forces you to refine your communication. It forces you to refine your pitch. Your sales pitch, that is. It teaches you how to be more articulate. But I'll tell you what it taught me. It taught me to be desperate. I would not be here today pastoring churches, helping plant churches, and seeing God open doors if I had not learned as a young man how to be desperately persistent. I got a job at this auto parts store that was probably the lowliest, scuzziest auto parts store in the town. I didn't know that at the time. It just happened to be the next business in the phone section. I did not have a car. I had to give my car back to the dealership. The business I was in with a friend went down the tubes. And I was out of work for 3 months, and I was letting my fingers do the walking, and I was calling the A's, and then the B section of the business, then C. When they'd say, hello, may I help you? I'd say, yes, may I speak to the personnel department? We don't have one. I said, well, can I talk to the person who does the hiring? Sure, what do you want? I'm looking for employment. What do you do? Whatever you need. Whatever you want done, I will do it. Finally, I got to the S's. And I called this auto parts store. The guy said, how did you know we were looking for someone? We just let someone go 1 hour ago. I said, because I'm your man. If I know things like that, you need to hire me now. I didn't say that. I told the truth. I said, you know what? I was just calling through the phone book and you were the next one on the list. He said, well, come on and fill the application. So I borrowed a friend's car, went and filled the application. Had to drive to another town about 40 miles away in a blizzard to apply with the person who actually does the hiring. He said, well, we'll call you Monday. First thing he told me was, Mark, now you're going to need your own car for this job. And have a car. But that wasn't his business. So I didn't tell him. I said, okay. I nodded in agreement. I did not nod and say, I have a car. I just nodded and agreed that I would need a car. And he said, well, we'll call you. So he called me Friday. And he said, well, we'd like you to start Monday. I said, great, I'll be there. Hung up the phone. Now, you got to know, I've been talking to God a lot about a job. Talking to God. I mean, I got two little children, and I don't have anything in the savings, and it's really tough. I had no credit cards at the time either. And so it's like, oh, God, you know, don't, God, do not play with my emotions. I have been looking for a job for 3 months, and I need this job, Lord. I need a car. I don't believe you're playing games with me here, Lord. I need a car. Nobody's going to give me a loan. I can't just, you know, call up my mom and dad. They don't have any money. So you're my dad. So I'm coming to you and I need a car. So I prayed most of the day Saturday. I don't mean I just locked myself in a room, but throughout the day, periodically through the day and in hours at a time, I pray, Lord, I need a car. Lord, provide for my family. Lord, I need a car. Nothing happened Saturday. Sunday came. I prayed again. I prayed again. I prayed again. I prayed again. Finally, Sunday night came. And I'm thinking, I'm on my knees now. Lord, I need a car. Is a car so much to ask? You gave Moses the Red Sea. You gave him a staff that became a snake. How about, Lord, how about this book? I'll just drop it on the floor and you make it a car, Lord. Just right now. I was about that desperate. About 10:30, the phone rings. Young lady's on the phone. She said, is this Mark Darling? I said, yes, it is. She said, well, you don't know me, but I have a car. It's in storage. It's not an antique or nothing. I just work right across the street at the university from where I live, so I never use my car. And I've been trying to find someone to use my car because it's just not good having it sit there, the mechanics told me. So I was wondering if you'd use my car. I said, excuse me? I said, I was wondering if you'd use my car. I said, well, now, how did you find out I don't know you? Well, I mean, I heard from somebody, and I just thought, I prayed about it, I thought, well, I'd call you. I said, well, you realize I got to drive this on country roads and all that? Yep, that's okay with me. I want it used, that's fine. First car I ever had with air conditioning was that car. God provided. Little did I know, little did I realize all of the life lessons that this job was going to teach me. First of all, I was lied to. The company, I found the books in a drawer hidden in the store. It was going down the tubes. There were like five or six other auto parts stores in the city, and the little city I was in was about 40,000 people, and 20,000 were college students. Three or four of the other auto parts stores, one of them right across the street, they had delivery girls that delivered in bikinis. They had two or three trucks. We had one. They had overnight delivery. We had two or three day delivery. And I'm thinking to myself, Lord, what have I gotten into? I started making calls, okay? Calls. You just get in your car. You drive to a gas station. You get out of your car. You walk in. And you introduce yourself. You say, yes, can I speak to the owner or the manager? I'm the manager. What the blank you want? Oh, hi, my name's Mark, and I'm with Sig Auto Part. I hadn't even got that out of order. They just pointed at the door. Get the blank out of here. Did not want to talk to you. And I'm like, I didn't do anything, man. I'm just a salesman is all I am. You know, I don't know what their problem was. Some of them thought, I don't know. They had bad memories of the former guy there. That's what I started to piece together. I never forget this one place I went. It's called Larry Lamb 66. And the first time I went and he heard where I was from, he just went into a tirade. He's calling me names. He's calling the company names. And that blankety blank guy that hired you, and he's mentioning his name. And he says, get out of here and don't ever come back. Well, now there are only so many gas stations to call, and I couldn't exactly X this guy out. And he did a lot of business. So a few weeks later, I went back with some donuts. I noticed he was eating a donut when I walked in. Try to be observant in these situations. It teaches you things. So I got him a whole pack of powdered sugar donuts, the kind Chris Prankrass likes to eat. And so I went in and I said, I come in peace. And he kind of cussed at me again. I said, look, Larry, I said, listen, all I'm asking for is a chance. You know, don't judge me by the last guy. The last guy, you know, obviously he created some problems. All I'm asking, and I don't want to be the first guy you call. I don't even have to be the second guy. But if you can't find it at the first or the second, can I be the third on the list? Here's a card. Just give us a call. We'll try to do the very best we can to get your part to you. This went on for a number of months, this kind of stuff, with place after place. Business was just kind of trickling in. The store, the guy told me the store was doing about $20,000, $25,000 a month. It was doing $10,000. I was on straight commission. He didn't tell me that. He told me I'd be salaried. I found out after I got started there, I'm on straight commission. So I got a different job at nights at a video arcade to help make ends meet. One day I read this verse about this persistent widow. And I thought to myself, here I am going out every day talking to people. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want to give me their business. I'm going to go to somebody who does want to give me their business. God. God owns that 66 station. God owns that country station. God owns this place, that place. I'm going to talk to God. And every day I started making sales calls on God. And I'm not lying about this. Since I was on straight commission, I thought to myself, well, you know what? The other salesmen every afternoon in the summer, they go out and they golf. I'm not going to go golf. I'm going to go out and talk to God. So I had this little park that I would go to because I didn't want anybody to find me. And I would pray for an hour every day. Lord, my family's depending on this. My life depends on this. God, give me business. God, you favored Nehemiah, you favored David, you favored Joseph, you favored Daniel. So I'm asking you to favor me when I walk into these places, and I'm asking you, Lord, to give me some business and double the amount of business that we're having a month, because it's the only way I'm going to be able to eke out a living. In a year, the business doubled. Went from $10,000 a month to $20,000 a month, and Larry Lamb, 66, he became the biggest customer that I had. Do you know why that happened? It's not because I'm a great salesman. I'm not. It's not because I knew a lot about cars. I didn't. It's because I was desperate. It's because I was persistent with men and with God, and particularly with God. Many, many years ago, 24, was the first time I ever met Kathy's parents. And it did not go well. I won't give you all the gory details, but let me just say, it went horrendous. It couldn't have gone worse, except they killed me. They threw me out of their house. almost physically. And I genuinely, I'm just being honest with you, I didn't do a thing. They just did not like the fact that we were Christian, that we wanted to live a Christian life, that we had different priorities than they had. And they were very upset their daughter got baptized in a lake. Wasn't my doing, it was her decision. I wasn't even there. And they threw me out. Well, so we waited and we prayed. And I'm going to tell you, if you've ever been in a situation and you want the parents' blessing, now if you don't, it doesn't mean squat. But if you do, you're desperate. And I remember that first night in the motel, because they wouldn't let me stay at their home. They said, oh, we don't know, you might have gotten to steal us blind. Like, you know, they don't trust their daughter. You think she'd bring home an idiot, you know, but that's evidently what they thought. So I'm in this motel room, and I took a pillow into the bathroom and my Bible, and I cried almost all night. I never cried like that in my whole life. I just cried, and I read every psalm, and I cried out to God, God, be merciful to me. I can't believe this happening. I'm stunned. I did not expect this. I expected something totally different. You've probably had those kinds of things happen. I expected them to be civil. I expected them to go, wow, this is a wonderful young man, and we're really glad for you, and sure, we'd be glad to come to the wedding. For the next 2 years, it went from bad to worse, bad to worse, bad to worse. And I can't give you all the details. All I can tell you is Kathy and I prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed, and we had friends pray, and they prayed, and they prayed, and they prayed. And after all that we did, we bent over backwards. I don't have time to tell you all the things we did to try to honor their requests. Finally, the day came to get married, and they refused to show up. So we canceled the wedding 1 day before the wedding. And we waited 3 more months, and finally they said, get on with your life, we're not even coming. And we got married. And then some weeks later, my wife conceived, and we had our first child, and they came up for about an afternoon and left. And they just held us at an arm's distance and an arm's distance. And when I would go down there, I was treated like just a dirt ball piece of scum. The little jabs, the little things that were said, I would just accept it. I would just pray in my heart for those who persecuted me and my bride. 20 years later, this was just about 4 years ago, we had been down for a graduation of one of the grandchildren. And it was really kind of strange because her mother asked me to pray. She never asked me to pray. In fact, when we used to come down, she'd tell Kathy, don't you dare tell the relatives what Mark does. 14 years ago, or almost 15, when we moved to the cities to start planting churches here and become a pastor, she said, oh my gosh, it's the biggest mistake of your life. Don't you dare tell any of the relatives what Mark's doing for a living. That's how manipulative, overbearing, and controlling she would try to be. So we would try to honor them unless someone asked. We'd just been down and her mother asked me to pray and I thought, this is unusual. This is really unusual. So I just prayed. And the next morning, her father, this was unusual, he came up to me and he said, you know, Mark, I never heard a prayer like that before. So I was really touched by that prayer. Now you got to understand, 20 years, we've never, ever brought up God to them. Never. I have sat in a chair at her table listening to her tell me about her jobs, her favorite movies, her favorite books, her new hairdo, and her brand new Riviera. That's what I'd do when I was with them. 3 weeks later, we get a phone call. It's Doug, Kathy's father. He says, Mark, or he says to Kathy, I need to talk with you. He says, you need to sit down. So I walk, she's in the kitchen, she's sitting on the steps. And he says, I came home, and this is 1 week shy of their 43rd wedding anniversary. Your mother, she's gone. She's ran off with another man. Stunned. He's stunned. We're stunned. Kathy's stunned, although not totally surprised. God began answering our prayers. A week later, he came to town. He went out to eat with Kathy. It's the first time they've been out alone in 20 years. They went out, and he just kept talking about God and crying and telling her how much he loved her. He's never told her that. He kept getting up, walking over the side and putting his arms around her and go, Kathy, I'm so proud of you. And then he'd sit down. And then he looked at her and said, you know, Kathy, he said, if God has to do this to get through to my life and to work in your mom's life, then that's fine with me. Kathy's just stunned. She's in the van. She's driving home with him to our house. And he said, you know, Kathy, he said, the biggest lesson I ever learned in my life, I learned from you, and I'm going to do it with your mother. And Kathy's really stunned. She said, what lesson is that, Daddy? She calls him Dad. She said this out. And he said, the lesson of forgiveness. He said, your mother and I treated you and Mark like scum. He said, we were so mean to you. That's the first time ever anything like that. Any vindication at all. 20 years. Do not give up. A week after that, we received a letter from him in longhand, 3 pages. He said, I wanted you to be the first to know that all the angels in heaven are rejoicing because me, today at 63, I was down at Mission Park, Kansas, in Kansas City, little park, and I was the first of 45 people to get baptized in a lake. And it was Kathy's baptism 24 years ago that convinced them she was in a cult. And here he is, going to a community church like The Rock and like Evergreen. His life turned around, getting baptized in a lake. 1 year ago, he asked me to do his wedding to his new bride, whose also name is Donna, except she's a different Donna. She has Christ in her life, and she loves God first. That's like the Red Sea parting. You know why I parted? Most importantly, because God is faithful, but secondly, because we never stopped asking. 20 years, never stopped asking. For 11 years, I never stopped asking, God, make me a pastor. You may not understand this about The Rock or Evergreen, but it's different than any other place. Any other place you want to be a pastor, you just go to school, you go get a job like anything else. But around here, that isn't how it works. You have to grow, and your character has to work, be worked on in such a way that they come and ask you. You don't ask them. And for 11 years, I wanted it more than marriage. I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I kept asking. And in all the asking, God kept working on me. Let me close with a simple thought. Persistence is the outward sign of inward faith. Perseverance in prayer is the outward sign of inward faith in God. If you want God to answer your prayers, then you must be persistent, determined, and you can't give up. You can't give up. It's something you keep asking for, you keep asking for, you keep asking for, and eventually, maybe not the way you expect, God will answer. You come back next week and we're going to talk about the second most important area for getting prayers answered. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father, we thank you tonight that you're such a faithful God, and you're the one, Lord, who said all these things. I didn't make them up. I'm not trying to convince people of things that are not true. This is your word. These are your truths. This is the thing that you ask us to do. I want to ask you, Lord, tonight, you would help us to be like Bob. You know what, Lord? I got a feeling, to be honest, there's not a lot of Bobs here tonight. But after tonight, I pray there'd be a lot of Bobs and a lot of Barbaras. A lot of people going out, asking God, talking to God over and over and over and over. Lord, you command us to. You invite us to. You desire to answer prayer. The question is, do we really want it? Are we really eager enough and desperate enough to seek the living God? Or will we settle for a cheap substitute and go find other ways, unrighteous ways sometimes, to get what we want? In Jesus' name, amen.